The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. To the Eric Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. I don't want to freak you out or anything, but I'm wearing neck makeup. That's right. My real neck looks nothing like what you see on your camera. If you're listening on the radio, just ignore what I just said. Folks, I'm so excited. I have a really, really special guest right now. I don't know where to start, except maybe I will just introduce him and we'll see what happens. Ned Ryan, congressman, author. Ned, welcome to the program.
Yeah, no, good to be with you, Eric. It's a real pleasure. I know that we've been trying to connect. And, you know, for those listening, we actually got to connect a little over a week ago when you came and spoke at Cornerstone Church here in Leesburg. And it was amazing message. And we got to speak briefly afterwards. So really happy to be on the show with you.
Well, I'm glad to have you on the show. Now, there's so many things going on with you that I don't know where to start. I want to get your bio. We're going to talk about your book, which launches today, June 17th, the anniversary of Bunker Hill. And we will talk about that in a second. But your bio, I mean, what do you say when somebody says, you know, hey, Who are you? What have you done? Like, what's your typical, you know, way that you say, what do you lead with?
What do I lead with? You know, it's funny because a lot of people look at the spelling of my last name, which is R-Y-U-N. It's pronounced Ryan, but it's spelled differently. And a lot of people go, are you related to that guy, the runner? Which, of course, I am. That's my father, Jim Ryan. Just an incredible man. Obviously, a three-time Olympian, world record holder of the mile, Presidential Medal of Freedom. And, you know, been back in D.C. the last 20 years. I came back when I graduated from the University of Kansas, that bastion of conservatism. I say that with the deepest of sarcasm, and came back and wanted to experience D.C. for a year or two. And here I am 20 years later, married to a beautiful woman and four kids, and really became involved in politics. And in many ways, Eric, was actually inspired by Francis Schaeffer. How Should We Then Live? Christian Manifesto. Obviously, watching my dad, a deeply principled man, and what he actually experienced while in the U.S. House for 10 years. And then as it began over the course of time, I helped raise money for his reelects and then started a youth organization called Generation Joshua, which was aimed at really getting homeschool youth more involved in civics and politics. And then in January of 2008, really stealing a page from the left, started something called American Majority, which I'm still doing today, in which we actually train people, good men and women, to run for state and local office, because I'm a big believer, first of all, we're to engage in that arena, but politics is policy. If you don't like what's happening in policy here in this country, you should get involved in politics and do it in as sophisticated and successful way as possible. And then over the course of time, obviously began doing some commentary on TV, doing some op-eds, and began authoring books. Obviously did Restoring Our Republic a few years ago. And then obviously this new book that's dropping today called The Adversary is a story of Boston and Bunker Hill.
Well, I want to talk to you about everything. This is, by the way, Ned, this is the show about everything. I keep forgetting to mention that in case people want to know how they can pigeonhole us. It's the show about everything. For example, today we're talking about history. We're talking about political activism. We're talking about middle distance running.
That's right.
I have to go back. Listen, your father, I met your father actually at Chuck Colson's funeral a number of years ago, and I couldn't believe I was meeting I was meeting Jim Ryan. I said, this can't be. This guy is considered by some, this is not a joke, to be literally the greatest high school athlete of all time, not just in running.
Right.
Okay, so we got to break this down because I wouldn't know you if it weren't for your dad and your mom. Your father, in high school, broke the 4-minute mile.
Yeah, the amazing part, Eric, is that he only began running very seriously in a systematic way, training 18 months before he did that. I mean, when and I
so
say
there's
this,
hope
God,
for me.
That maybe I'm not optimistic, but maybe you're, I'm saying there's a chance.
I can do it.
But it's clear that God made him to run. I mean, it's pretty incredible when you realize what he was able to do at a young age and the punishment he was able to endure to actually get to the point where he was. I tell people all the time, when you're running 100 miles a week, starting in high school, and really only had a couple injuries along the way, the ability that he had to be able to do that week in, week out, month after month, year after year, obviously led him to running, you know, in three Olympics. He made his first Olympic team when he was a junior in high school, broke the world record in the mile, the 1500, the half mile, and then went on to obviously run two more Olympics, you know, in 72 was his last one. And the thing that's interesting to me, Eric, he's considered one of the greatest high school athletes. In fact, when President Trump gave him the Presidential Medal of Freedom last year, he actually highlighted this because he said, you know, when ESPN did a survey, who's the greatest high school athlete of all time, guess who won? It wasn't LeBron James. It wasn't Tiger Woods. This guy named Jim Ryan beat out those people as the greatest high school athlete of all time in the ESPN poll because of what he was able to accomplish. And you have to remember, back in the day, when he's in high school, he's taking on gold medalists and world record holders and beating them as a high schooler.
It kind of makes me hate your dad in some ways, because nobody should be that good. Hey, Jim Ryan, I've had it with people like you. No, people, honestly, I ran in high school, and I think I broke the six-minute mile as a sophomore.
Wait.
And I skipped the grade. I was only 14. Unbelievable. Cracked the six-minute barrier at age 14, just a child. And people don't know that in those days, if you trained like that, if you got an injury, they were obliged to shoot you just like a horse. It was no different in those days. Now, seriously, when I met your dad, I was so honored to meet him and then to find out that he was a profound man of Christian faith.
That's right.
And that he was in the Congress and stuff. And so when I heard from your mom, Ann, because she's the quiet one, she told me, she starts telling me about you, and I got to know you and what you're up to. I was so excited, really, to know that you're out there doing what you're doing. So the name of your organization is American Majority, and I want people to know about that, and I want to talk about that. But I want to talk today about your book. Your book launches today, June 17th. Tell us about it.
You know, it's one of those things, Eric, that I've always been fascinated by the life of Dr. Joseph Warren, who was a young Harvard-educated doctor who was a protege of Sam Adams in the 1760s into the 1770s, who really became one of the leaders of the resistance in Boston to Parliament's acts. And it was one of those stories that I finally decided I've got to write this. I mean, this is a singular man, a life worth knowing and understanding. And so that was the genesis. And I know that you've written many books where you start with a certain point and all of a sudden, you know, you become fascinated with the even greater story. And so it started with the genesis of I want to write the story of Dr. Joseph Warren. And then it became about the last 9 or 10 months before Bunker Hill and this transatlantic story where how did Englishmen stop talking to each other and all of a sudden start shooting each other on June 17th on Bunker Hill? Obviously, they'd started shooting each other at Lexington and Concord a few months before. But how did Englishmen stop talking to each other and decided words were over, we're going to settle this with muskets? And so it became this exploration for me of what was the genesis? What was the genesis for the resistance by Warren and Adams and Hancock and Revere? And, you know, it was one of those things, Eric, where a lot of people will say, well, the American Revolution was really about they didn't like the Stamp Act or the tax, the Tea Act or the Sugar Act. It really wasn't about that, Eric. And I think one of the reasons that I wrote this is to really try and explain some of why they fought. And it was interesting in my research. I came across a really interesting interview between one of the last surviving fighters during the day of Lexington and Concord. And he was being asked, why did you fight? Was it for the Stamp Act? He's like, I never saw a stamp in my life. Well, was it because of the Tea Act? I didn't drink tea and I didn't know anybody else who drank tea. Well, was it because you read Locke and these other English philosophers that inspired you to fight for freedom? He's like, I didn't read them. I read the Bible. I read Isaac Watts' hymns, and I read the catechism. And this person was perplexed and said, well, then why did you fight? He's like, I fought, and I and others fought because we'd always governed ourselves, and we always meant to. And Parliament and the king's ministers meant that we shouldn't. That's why we fought. And it became this issue of who decides, who governs. And I think the thing that's interesting to me in all of this research and this story, Eric, is this. 85% of Massachusetts at the time was direct English lineage. Wasn't Scottish, wasn't Irish. They had come from England. They had brought with them the ideas of the 1628 Petition of Right, the 1689 Bill of Rights, the Magna Carta. They'd also had the charter with Massachusetts.
I have to cut you off because we're at the end of a segment. But folks, when we come back, the rest of that sentence, my guest is Ned Ryan. Don't go away.
Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their three-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out.
Hey there, friends. Eric Metaxas here. Joe Biden and the Democrats have laid out the most socialist agenda our country has ever seen. Instead of following President Trump's blueprint that had the economy booming, the Dems are going to raise taxes, increase regulations, and skyrocket an already outrageous national debt. If your retirement is in traditional investments, it is in jeopardy. Americans should be diversifying their investments with gold and precious metals. Gold gives you control over your wealth and protects you from market volatility, inflation, and a weakening dollar. When investing in gold, I turn to Legacy Precious Metals. Legacy Precious Metals has over 40 years of experience in helping Americans protect their finances, and this team is prepared to patiently consider your own personal financial needs. If you're looking to invest in gold, call the good folks at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-473-6204 or visit them online at legacypminvestments.com. Don't leave your retirement to chance, friends. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. That's 866-473-6204.
Want the people to know that he saved my soul, but I still like to listen to the radio. They say rock and roll is wrong, we'll give you one more chance. I say I feel so good, I gotta get up and dance.
Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Ned Ryan. The book is The Adversaries, A Story of Boston and Bunker Hill. Ned, I cut you off in the middle of your making an important point. Please continue that point.
So these ideas that the colonists brought to them from England were English ideas, right? The whole idea of petition of right. You can't quarter troops in private homes. You have the right to bear arms, free elections, free speech. They brought them over to the colonies, and these were written down in black and white. Many of these ideas were passed by Parliament, assented to by the English kings. They viewed these ideas as sacrosanct. This is really a contract between us and the governing powers in England, and this is a contract that we actually hold sacred. The interesting thing, and I think this kind of applies to today, Eric, where English people with two very different worldviews started to go in different directions, where the American colonists, most of whom were English lineage, said, no, these are natural inherent rights that were guaranteed to us in writing. Whereas in England, Parliament and the King's ministers really decided it was more a series of suggestions, if inconvenient, were not to be followed. And the other interesting dynamic, too, I was finding in a lot of different stories, the idea of what is rule of law. To the Americans, the idea of rule of law is that all laws must actually be in harmony with natural inherent rights, as stated and shown by our creator. Whereas with the British, Parliament made laws, and then they were going to enforce them no matter where those laws came from, no matter what the motivations. That was their concept of rule of law. And at a certain point, they realized you might be talking about rule of law and you might be talking about rule of law, two completely different definitions. And at some point, there was no compromise.
Well, isn't it interesting that we're going through something similar today where we are being forced as Americans to really look again, re-examine what is liberty? What are the limits of liberty? When is liberty abrogated? And then what do we do about it? I don't think we're at the point where we would pick up arms, but we'd better understand where that point would be. In other words, you can't push a free people around forever. They are going to go back to their to their history books, and they're going to say, wait a second, I think we've crossed a line here. We need to elect people who understand what liberty is.
Yeah, no, I think you make a great point. I've told people this is a battle of the ballot boxes, right? It's not a battle of bullets. We have that right as a free people. And I think that, but this is one of the reasons that this story from, you know, 246 years ago still applies to today, because it really was principled defiance in the face of an overwhelming and, quite frankly, arbitrary authoritarianism. That's why it's a story for all time that still applies to today. What do you do in the face of authoritarianism? What do you actually believe? And I think that's something that Warren clearly demonstrated in his life and his writings and his actions, along with Adams and Hancock and Revere. You actually believe something, and obviously there's a lot to live for, but Warren and others decided at some point there's so much to live for, but there's also things worth dying for. And this idea that they were going to found a free American republic based on this premise, liberty first and last and forever, which, quite frankly, we haven't been true to through our history, but it was an idea, it was aspirational, and they said, we will be a free people, we will govern ourselves, we will be a self-governing people, and we will create laws that are in harmony with natural inherent law, and we will govern ourselves. And Parliament and the King's minister said, we don't think so. You're going to submit. And they said, we don't think so. We're going to resist.
Oh, we don't think so. You don't think so. We don't think
right.
so. Well, you know, Ned, it is interesting to me that because things have gotten so crazy in this country recently, people are going back and they are reexamining our history. And I think more and more people are learning the history that you have in your book and other kinds of American history. And they're thinking, this is interesting. I forgot this, or I never learned this. I better learn it now, because we're in one of those moments. So the title of the book is The Adversaries, A Story of Boston and Bunker Hill, Ned Ryan, R-Y-U-N. So, Ned, what is the book for people who know nothing about it? What is The Adversaries?
Well, The Adversaries, I came up with that title because in the book, there's a microcosm of the greater conflict between the American colonies and England, between Dr. Joseph Warren and Lord Francis Rawdon, who was an actual British officer, a young Irishman in Boston at the time. And it was a conflict between two very different worldviews, in which Lord Rawdon, obviously of nobility, couldn't understand why these colonists were resisting the king and Parliament and the king's ministers' acts. And Dr. Joseph Warren standing firm in the face of incredible intimidation. I mean, Eric, I detail a lot of this in the book, but this wasn't as though the British were 3,000 miles away in London. There was a very real presence in Boston at the time. And I make the point in the author's note at the beginning, by the time you hit the spring of 1775, there literally was a British regular for every adult male in Boston. It was a police state. And when Warren gives his fifth anniversary oration for the Boston Massacre on March 6th, he did it the day after because the day of was a Sunday, 30 to 40 British officers came to the Old South Meeting House to intimidate him into silence. And they sat on the steps and the pulpit in front of him to try and silence him. And he looked out over their heads and he spoke to about 5,000 Bostonians. And he told them what is at stake. And he closes out. And the other thing that's interesting, Eric, Dr. Joseph Warren has been forgotten a little bit by history, but guess who mentioned him in his first inaugural address? Ronald Reagan. And he said of Dr. Joseph Warren, he might have been one of the greatest of the founding fathers. And then he quoted in his first inaugural address some of Warren's words from that day on March 6, 1775, in which he said, "Our country is in danger now. You are to decide the important question upon which rests the happiness and liberty of millions yet unborn. Act worthy of yourselves." And I think about those words said 246 years ago and think, wow, those still really apply to today, because guess what? It's incumbent upon us, the decisions that we make and what we decide to do, the happiness in millions of those yet unborn, it's going to impact what we do today. Their lives will be impacted by what we choose not to do.
It's astonishing that we're living through these times, Ned. I mean, I have to say that the world in which we were raised, the worst it got was nothing like where we are now. We really believed in the institutions. I mean, I remember, you're probably too young, but when Watergate was over, people said, hey, it proves that the system works. There were these guardrails in place, you know, that if things got out of line, we had the checks and balances. But we know that human beings, being fallen, are capable eventually of drifting past these things without even knowing it. It's happened to others before, but we've never had a country as free as ours. So we're living in an amazing time.
Well, let me say 2 points here. We are the pinnacle of Western civilization. And I say that in many ways because it's a statement of fact. I also say it to trigger the left, because the American Republic is the pinnacle of Western civilization when you look back at its founding. But you hit on an interesting point, Eric. When you go back and look at our founding fathers got one thing very, very right. They understood human nature. They understood that imperfect human nature should never be entrusted with consolidated power. And I write about this in my other book, Restoring Our Republic. They constructed our republic based off that premise, that we had God-given rights to life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. At the same time, imperfect human beings should never be trusted with consolidated power, ergo, diffuse power. That's how they constructed the machinery of the republic. And I juxtapose them against the progressives. You know what the progressives got wrong? Human nature. They believed that human nature was perfectible, and through the administrative state, this massive bureaucracy, they were going to advance human nature and society to reach utopia or nirvana or whatever it is. But they trusted human nature with consolidated power. And ultimately, today, we're kind of seeing the end result of that when you have an out-of-control administrative state run by imperfect human beings.
We need to break this down, Ned, because I know you know this, but in case anybody's not tracking, you have just summed up the difference between a biblical worldview,
that's right,
and an unbiblical worldview. The
right.
Bible says that we are fallen, we're broken, we're sinful, and that apart from God, our tendency is to accrue more and more power to ourselves selfishly so that we can crush those who don't have the power that we do. That's what human beings have done since the beginning of time. The founders had a biblical worldview, and they understood that unless you can create a system that takes into account the evil in the hearts of men, you're
That's
dead.
Right.
The liberals
That's right.
and the people in the French Revolution believed in the Tower of Babel. We will reach heaven on our own. Forget about God. We can do it. And we're going to climb into the heavens, a satanic project. And they have, obviously without realizing it's a satanic project, I guess Buckley used to refer to immanentizing the eschaton, right? We want to get to heaven. We don't want to go through the cross. We don't want to deal
That's
with
right.
our sinful nature. So it's interesting that right now, you and I, in our own lifetimes, we're seeing this played out in American politics, clearly.
Yeah, no, clearly. I mean, again, just to highlight again the point you made, we as human beings, oftentimes, if left to our own devices, we do what we can, not what we should. It's just in our human nature. We devolve into doing whatever we think we can get away with. And the founders understood that. They understood we can't consult.
Forgive me. When we come back, we're just going to continue the conversation. I'm talking to Ned Ryan. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
Hides a smile when she's wearing a frown. Blue jacket, you're not so down. You like your life in a freeform style.
Prescription Dispensing Labs is a national licensed pharmacy specializing in personalized prescription and natural medicine. The pharmacists at PD Labs are credited with formulating unique nasal sprays for the dreaded brain fog and a leader in uncovering new compounds to improve your health. PD Labs is one of the first pharmacies to now offer a telemedicine group trained in prevention medicine and how to restore your health. They have developed signature professional supplements that really work rather than just promotional advertising. PD Labs Pharmacy prides itself on innovation and amazing customer service that show dedication to your health. Today, everyone needs a choice in their healthcare, and they bring many refreshing options on how to maximize your body's amazing capabilities to bounce back. PD Labs has an extensive network of practitioners nationwide dedicated to true healthcare, not sick care. Visit their website, pdlabsrx.com, for free health tips, podcasts, and their popular online store. Call 888-909-0110. Ask for Ray and tell them Eric sent you. That's 888-909-0110.
Make like a Mr. Milk Toast, you'll get shut out.
Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Ned Ryan, the son of Ann Ryan and her husband, Jim Ryan. Ned, this is important stuff. Today is the anniversary of Bunker Hill, June 17th. Now, for people who need a refresher, and we all do on all of these things, what happened at Bunker Hill? Why was that an important moment in history?
It was really the first set battle of the American Revolution. Obviously, about 2 months before, you'd had Lexington and Concord. But this is where the Americans with intent went to really Breed's Hill, built a redoubt, and basically put themselves in a position to challenge British control over Boston. And the British realized if we do not run the Americans off of Breed's Hill, our days in Boston are done. We'll have to sail to Nova Scotia. And so it became on that afternoon of June 17th, where some of the best regiments, best companies in the entire British Army rowed across the Charles River to Charlestown Peninsula and marched up the hill. And they honestly thought, Eric, that when they came charging up the hill with bayonets, that the American farmers were going to turn tail and run. And the shock that the British had when they realized they're not going to retreat, they're going to fight. And the amazing part in the battle, and I don't want to give away too much of it, the British were stunned when they finally, on the third charge, were able to get over the walls of the Earth Redoubt. Most of the time, professional soldiers at that point would retreat. And the last moments inside that redoubt are just an amazing story where these American farmers, those provincials, when they ran out of bullets, were picking up rocks, were picking up anything that they could to fight to the very last, because that's how strongly they felt about what they were doing that day. It's an incredible story, Eric. I mean, I keep on going back in this research over the last 9-10 months before Bunker Hill, that obviously this book culminates with the Battle of Bunker Hill. Truth is stranger than fiction, and I wrote this book in such a way, I call it faction. 90% of it's fact. I mean, these are real human beings. There are no fictional characters in this. Obviously, I had to create some of the dialogue between Gage and Warren or Warren and his fiancée Mercy, but there were a lot of these scenes that actually took place. A lot of the dialogue is true to what was taking place when English officers are riding home going, we are headed towards civil war. And I thought that was interesting to me, Eric. The English realized, again, English people in Massachusetts, they're riding home going, we are headed towards civil war, not revolution, civil war. And I really explore, too, what is true sedition? What is true insurrection? Who decides? Because these founders of the Free American Republic, guess what the ruling class in England thought of them? They thought they were seditious. They thought they were insurrectionists. And in return, there's a really interesting conversation I have in this between the Reverend Samuel Cooper and Warren about what is true sedition? What is true insurrection? Who decides?
I can tell you what isn't true insurrection. It's called January 6th.
That's right.
That was a Reichstag fire. I just say that in case people want to read my Bonhoeffer book. Now, by the way, I wanted to say that right behind you, I see a picture of Bonhoeffer. And wait a minute, that's my Bonhoeffer book. Come on,
that's right.
Ned, get out of town. What is that all about?
It's the first book of yours that I ever read. And it was one of those books, again, I'd always been a fan of Bonhoeffer, and then read the book and realized I was even more of a fan of what he actually did, again, in the face of this evil authoritarianism in which he actually stood up. And I think this is a point you hit when you came and spoke at Cornerstone just over a week ago, that we as Christians are actually called into the arena to actually challenge. It's not Romans. I think you said Romans 13. Well, all powers are ordained by God. No, we actually have to challenge the authority and say, if you are making laws that are not just, that are not in line with natural inherent rights, they are unjust laws. And I actually quote St. Augustine in this, in which unjust laws are no laws at all. And we have to have that conversation and be willing to have the courage and the authority to be able to stand with resolve and say, no, we do not accept what you have created as arbitrary law as though it really is a just law.
Like wearing masks? Okay, seriously, yeah. Though, I got to tell you, we Americans, and I include my generation in this, we've forgotten these things. You cannot have America unless the majority of Americans know and understand these things and live them out in their lives. And for a number of decades, we have drifted. These things have evaporated. And that's why we are where we are. And that's why people are willing to accept laws that are not just laws, because we cease to be Americans when we cease to understand these things.
Yeah, but I think this was all done with intent. I mean, think about how progressive left has taken over our school system. They don't want to teach the real history of America because that's the antithetical to their worldview. If people actually knew how the machinery of the republic was supposed to work, they might actually start to question what's taking place around them. No, this has been done with intent. I mean, this is one of the reasons, I was on the 1776 commission, which, of course, Biden outlawed in day one. But we wanted to go
but
back.
But I got good news for you. He's not actually the president, so don't worry about it. Go ahead.
No, with intent, going into public schools and teaching these things and teaching young children and future generations to actually love their country, but to understand the unique triumph that the American Republic is. We are a unique nation. We should embrace it and understand who we are. And it is a triumph of Western civilization. It's nothing to be ashamed of. We've had our share of mistakes. But because of the sacrifices that were made 200 and some years ago, it has given us the most amount of freedom and prosperity that any other world and society has ever seen in world history.
I want to say to people out there, hey, if you're against slavery, if you're against racism, you better be pro-American. You better love America, because this is the nation that has sacrificed the blood, mostly of young white men, for God's principles to fight against institutional slavery, racism. It's an astonishing thing. We're forgetting these things. Folks, we're going to be back continuing our conversation with Ned Ryan. Don't go away. Folks, I'm talking to Ned Ryan. The book is The Adversaries, a story of Boston and Bunker Hill. A couple questions before we continue the conversation. How can people find your organization, American Majority? Because it's a great, important organization.
I appreciate that. Yeah, no, it's been 13 years since I founded it. AmericanMajority.org. And again, if people are wondering what we do, we train nonstop on how good men and women can actually go run for office. How do you put together a campaign plan? How do you get out the vote? How do you raise money? But we also train activists on how to be more effective. Listen, I love a good rally. They're a lot of fun. But the only way that you bring real change in your community is to organize into coalitions, to understand how you keep your elected officials accountable. So we've trained in all 50 states, trained tens of thousands of people, but it is really one of those things. If you want to see real change happen in this country, again, I go back to it's a battle of the ballot boxes. And if we have good men and women who know how to win politically and get in the right place, they're going to actually implement the right policy.
I love it. And I'm going to ask you a really tough question, and I want you to be honest. What's the fastest mile you ever ran?
I knew you were going to ask this. It was 4:14 or something like that. It was kind of
4:14. Wait,
yeah,
wait a minute. The fact, Ned, no. The fact that you're acting like, oh, it's only 4:14. What
is
wrong with you?
Well, I was in shape to probably run 4:05, 4:03, 4:05, somewhere in that range, and just bombed.
Look, it's very simple. You can blame it on your mother, Anne. It's her genes that robbed you of being able to break through. Come on, you know that's fact.
But I will say this, the cool story, there were only three father-son combinations in the entire history of Kansas track and field that won the mile championship. Obviously, Glenn Cunningham and his son, and then Jim Ryan and Ned Ryan. So it was kind of cool. My senior year won the mile title at the Class 6A state meet. So kind of a fun story. Running paid for college, Eric. But I have to confess, it was a bit of a disappointment beyond paying for college. Not quite the success I had hoped for.
You know what? That's just pathetic. Albin and I were looking at each other like, if I could ever run like a 4:14 mile,
I don't think
I would act like, well, but I get it. If your father's Jim Ryan, you know, you're going to be like that. Yeah.
I heard a rumor that you ran sub-6 at Iffley Road Stadium in Oxford.
I cracked. Actually, that's true. The place where, and I did this in my 50s, the place where,
really?
Yeah, I did this a few years, 5 years ago, the place where obviously Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile. I was, my daughter and I were in Oxford doing some Socrates in the City events, which people can see online, socratesinthecity.com. And I realized that the Iffley track, I thought, wait a minute, this is the same track. This is where Roger Bannister, so I had to time myself. Okay. And I'm not kidding. It was kind of like a 601 mile, but
I feel like it's probably 559.
I was like 52 years old. So for me, that was pretty good. And I didn't train for it or anything like that. So I'm very proud of that. And how cool is it that you brought it up on my program? I like the cut of your jib, Ned Ryan. Listen, your book is so important. We got to stop joking. Eric, shut up, Eric. I want to hear more about The Adversary. So this is an historical novel, but there's so much history that it's almost nonfiction, correct?
That's correct. I mean, again, 90% of it's fact. I color the edges, again, because there's certain things that we don't know if those conversations actually took place, but to move the story along. Yeah, for example, on March 16, 1775, there was a day of prayer and fasting in Boston that was called for by the Provincial Congress. Samuel Cooper didn't give the sermon, but I have him giving the sermon. But while he's giving the sermon, British officers actually did show up outside that day of prayer and fasting, pitched a tent, had drinks, were drunk, and basically came to try and disrupt that day of prayer and fasting. So I show that scene, which actually did happen. Some of the actual details obviously are a little bit different than probably what took place. But again, to move the story along and to promote some of these characters, I wrote it in a certain way. But, you know, my hope is in all of this, Eric, that people, as history is being weaponized against us, right? The insidious fiction of the 1619 Project, let's go back and have a conversation about real history, about who these men and women were, what did they do, what were the sacrifices they made, well, what did they actually believe, and what were they trying to accomplish, and then quite frankly, what did they accomplish, and how should we apply that to our lives today?
So everything in the book, The Adversary, is a story of Boston and Bunker Hill, is true except maybe 10%. Like one of the drunken British soldiers you have named as Joseph P. Biden of Baltimore. That's made up. I think that's made up. And he married, I think, his babysitter, Dr. Jill Biden. That's also that's made up. So listen, folks, you know, we take liberties. But this history is important, Ned. I joke around just because I'm so delighted to talk to you. But it's really vital that we teach ourselves what we've forgotten, what this book has. I mean, even the most basic things, like many of us think is the war started in 1776. No, it didn't. It started in 1775. Bunker Hill was today in 1775. Just so that we get the chronology leading up to what they did in Philadelphia in 1776 and then on and on and on. But I mean, the more you learn of it, the more fascinating it is. That's why I'm kind of glad that as bad as things are, it's sort of forcing us to look back to try to understand these things.
Yeah, no. And it's history done well. And I point this out in the author's note. I went through a tour of Christ Church in Philadelphia 2000. We were there for the RNC convention. And it was our family, mom, dad, couple siblings. And then all of a sudden, the guy that was giving us the tour of Christ Church turned around and he looked at us. And it's a thought I haven't forgotten for 20 years. He said, history done well is like the wind at our backs. And I've been thinking about that literally for 20 some years, how history should inspire us. We should understand it, but it should inspire us to action today. And that's one of the reasons I wrote this story is because, first of all, people need to remember Dr. Joseph Warren. And the sacrifices that he made with intent, Eric, that he went and he did what he did with intent because he believed in something and he believed something was actually worth fighting for. And I think we've got to go back and look at this history and go, he's an example for us. How do we apply what he did to today and understand there are real lessons to be learned from history that we can apply to our situation today that can inspire us and move us to action?
Well, Ned Ryan, we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for writing this book. I know what it is to write a book. It's a huge, huge effort, but it's so important. Folks, I hope that you can get a copy of The Adversaries, A Story of Boston and Bunker Hill. The more we learn, the more fascinating it is. I've said that. But Ned, thank you for your part in this. Folks can go to AmericanMajority.org and Ned Ryan to be continued. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. I appreciate it.
Wandered so aimless, life filled with sin. Well,
what?
What?
It's time for the homework assignment. Every day on this program, we're going to be giving out a homework assignment.
Oh,
I've been doing
homework.
It casually, but folks, it's going to be part of your grade.
Mm.
And I think it is incumbent on me to say clearly what the assignment is, since this goes into your final grade in the class. Okay, so today's homework assignment.
Yes.
First thing... This, by the way, this is for the month, SalemNow.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to SalemNow.com, there's a lot of stuff you can watch with your whole family. So visit SalemNow.com. But specifically, there's a film out. It's called The Streets Were My Father. It's the journey of three inner city Chicago men, a story of fatherlessness, gang life, prison life, and then the power of God to change lives, transform lives dramatically. It is hugely inspiring, but it also underscores the practically the most important issue there is. It's called fatherlessness. If you don't want crime in America, deal with fatherlessness, because it's huge. So go to SalemNow.com. It's called The Streets Were My Father. Okay, that's assignment number one. Assignment number,
number two.
Tell your friends, please, about MyPillow.com and MyStore.com. And using the code Eric. A lot of people, maybe they're watching Fox News or something else, and it gives you a code. And I'm thinking, do you really want to give that portion of the profit to Fox or to whomever?
Right.
Or do you want to give it to this show, which has been banished from YouTube and is being sued by, I can't even go into that publicly. So we do need your help.
Yeah.
Every time you use the code Eric at MyPillow.com or MyStore.com, most of my books are at MyStore.com, and we'll have way more coming up soon. You're helping us defray those costs on this program, and we do need your help. So if you tell your friends to use the code Eric, we're grateful. And as part of that, Nutramedics is a new big sponsor
That's
on the program.
Right.
We've had Tim Eaton on now twice. Watch those videos. We posted them on Rumble, and if you get our email newsletters, you've seen them. They are heroes, honestly, because they're producing a spectacular product, and I'm learning a lot about different herbs and spices, or whatever they call them.
Supplements.
Oh, yeah, supplements. Yeah. But not only that, they give 50% of their royalties to missions.
Right.
And you can listen to the,
the
thing.
Yeah.
But if you use the code Eric there, you get 20% off. And most of us use all these things, whether it's, you know, magnesium or zinc or vitamin C or vitamin D, whatever, all the basics, stevia, melatonin, and on and on and on and on. They have more exotic stuff. But I just want to say that every time you use the code Eric, you save 20%, and it helps defray costs on this program, and we need your help. So that's a homework assignment. And then finally, okay, CSI.
Yes.
We are freeing slaves in the Sudan. Folks, am I making this up? No. People in this is like the wake-up call. For us in the West, we complain about, you know, getting banned from YouTube. There are people enslaved for their faith in Sudan. And I just want to say that we can do something about it. We did something about it. It was a year ago or 8 months ago. We did a huge number of was it Chris? That's right.
Yeah.
And we freed like thousands of slaves. And this is an amazing thing. I can't even believe I'm saying this.
Yeah.
But that's what CSI does. You can participate. Whatever you give goes to this. But anybody who gives $250, that frees a slave. And they don't buy them out of slavery. It's more complicated. I won't go into it now. But it frees a slave and then sets them up in a new life. Now, again, it's incomprehensible to us. We're talking about people enslaved. Yeah. So CSI, their boots on the ground, they're helping.
Yes.
It's kind of astonishing to me that they do this. So
The banner is right at the top of the
Metaxastalk.com. 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 Have I mentioned our radio website is Metaxastalk.com.
There you go.
Have I mentioned that?
And you can call 888-253-3522.
Say it again.
888-253-3522. Please give generously. This is incredible. People talk about slavery 150 years ago. This is happening today.
I mean,
and you can free a slave.
And the fact
today.
Is, because of CSI, you can do something about it. God bless you. Thank you.